This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Linda Wertheimer. Scott Simon is on assignment in Baghdad.
I dismiss the critics who say that democracy can't flourish in Iraq. It may not look like America. Thomas Jefferson may not emerge.
President George W. Bush talking Thursday with NBC's Tom Brokaw on board Air Force One. The president went on to say, "Nevertheless, I do believe there can be a representative government and all factions can be represented." Our own Eagle One has landed here in the studio. NPR senior news analyst Dan Shore joins us. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Linda.
There are reports that President Bush will declare an end to all military hostilities in Iraq next week. Mm-hmm. Does that mean the war is over, or should we parse that phrase?
Well, parsing, I think, is necessary. The war with Saddam Hussein looks as though it's about over, but it looks as though the war for the hearts and minds of Iraqis is just getting started. The Shiite mullahs, who claim to represent 60% of Iraq's population, are apparently getting a lot of help and guidance from Iran. They're trying to fill the power vacuum themselves. Defense Secretary Rumsfeld, who's leaving himself for Iraq today, says it won't be allowed to happen. But there is a great, great dilemma, and that is, how do you squelch the demands of a majority in the name of democracy?
Well, that will presumably be the problem of retired Lieutenant General Jay Garner. He's meeting with Iraqi faction leaders for more talks on an interim government. But there are roadblocks to establishing this new government, do you think, that the U.S. did not anticipate?
Yes. I just in the same way that it didn't seem to anticipate the looting of the museums, they apparently were not aware that while Saddam Hussein, in the name of his radical policy, had been sitting on the Shiites for all this time, that they would be organized and ready. There was lots of surprise here when up to 1 million of them marched to the holy city of Karbala. They were carrying slogans anti-Saddam, but also anti-American, and had thousands of slogans on placards, all apparently coming from a central place. And now they have a fatwa, a religious edict, already. Saddam ran a secular radical regime focused in his Ba'ath party, like Syria. Question now is whether secular radicalism is going to be replaced not by democracy, but by religious fundamentalism in Iraq.
This week, the U.S. arrested more members of Saddam Hussein's regime, including former Deputy Prime Minister Tariq Aziz and the former Iraqi spy chief. How much can the U.S. count on these arrests to help find Saddam Hussein or to find weapons of mass destruction?
Well, as for Saddam Hussein, I think the administration is now tending to believe that he, in fact, did die in that attack on him before the war actually started. At least they have no way of getting any other kind of information, right? And they've got now some 20 Iraqis on their most wanted list who are in American custody. Apparently, they have not provided very much, nor, in fact, have they provided very much information about the weapons of mass destruction. And that begins to look like something of an embarrassment for the Bush administration. It makes you wonder about Secretary of State Powell's big speech to the UN Assembly giving specific locations of weapons and now saying they're not sure they can find them. And what is President Bush say that maybe they're dispersed somewhere and they're indicating that perhaps they never will find them is a problem.
Dan, a small amount of oil began flowing from Iraq's southern fields this week, just as OPEC cut oil production to stabilize prices. What do you think the reactivation of oil production means?
Well, obviously it means that Iraq itself will be able to contribute more to paying the bill for its own reconstruction. But it also has an international effect. That's to say that if you get a lot of oil flowing from Iraq, that will tend to bring down the world prices for oil, and that would be a great help to the American economy right now.
So let's turn to North Korea. This week, the U.S. and North Korean and Chinese representatives met in Beijing to discuss North Korea's nuclear program. And the North Korean deputy foreign minister surprised everybody by announcing that his nation already has nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. Why make a claim like this now?
Why does the dictator Kim Jong-il do anything at any given particular time. Why would North Korea now want to stick it in the eye of China, the best friend that it has in the world? Well, you don't know. Korea has said before that they have the weapons of they have nuclear weapons, or they could make nuclear weapons. What is new and what they say now is that the only question is whether to start testing them or to export them. You talk about exporting nuclear weapons, and you're talking very scary talk, because you're beginning to make the United States worry about whether they will end up in the hands of Al-Qaeda or someone. And the question is, why are they doing this? What do they hope to accomplish by scaring the United States, other than to start a drive for sanctions against North Korea?
In China also, Dan, I think we ought to mention that 122 people have now died from severe acute respiratory syndrome. At least 2,750 are infected. Beijing is now under a World Health Organization travel advisory, as is Toronto in Canada. Dan, you've called SARS nature's bioterrorism.
Yeah, what I meant by that is that it's going to take an international effort, as it's been in the case of weapons of mass destruction. It may take a greater international effort to cope with this. And I say that because I think it was a scandal that the first cases of SARS turned up in Hong Kong and South China in November. And they were deliberately kept secret until February, because the Chinese government worried about keeping its tourism and keeping its economy on track. Now, it is true that if you say you have these cases, you're asking for economic trouble. On the other hand, to keep a secret is really unacceptable. And what really is called for is for a World Health Organization with greater powers, powers to impose sanctions against governments that don't cooperate in keeping each other informed of these epidemics.
Here in the United States, Congress comes back and gets to work on Tuesday. But this week, Democratic presidential candidate Congressman Richard Gebhardt called on lawmakers to repeal President Bush's tax cut and use the money to pay for universal health care. What about a proposal like this? Can it get attention for a Democratic candidate during wartime?
Well, it certainly has already gotten a certain amount of attention for Gephardt. I don't think it's a question of getting attention now. I think it's a question of who gets attention as you get closer to the election. And on the Democratic side, as you get closer to nominating a Democratic candidate, the Democrats have had a lot of trouble figuring out how and when they could try to oppose Bush, even in wartime. What Gephardt has now done is nothing if it's not bold. He wants, in effect, as you said, to repeal all the Bush tax cuts, to use them to pay for a health plan that will cost $692 billion in its first year and provide coverage for about 97% of the 41 million Americans who now lack health coverage. He's gotten attention mainly because Democrats have been so timorous about taking on President Bush. Here is someone who is ready to take on President Bush, and so, if nothing else, he gets a certain amount of attention.
Thanks very much, Dan.
Sure thing, anytime.
NPR senior news analyst Daniel Shore.